This is Mayor Rick Kreisman inviting you to stay tuned to the St. Pete City Hall broadcast from RadioSt.Pete.com. The City Hall broadcast is a podcast designed to give you an informal look inside your city government. Here is your host, Will Kuntz.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the City Hall broadcast. I'm Will Kuntz, your host, back after a short, very short hiatus. We did miss one episode a couple weeks ago, but we're back. And we got Kevin King here. He's back with me.
Back and better than ever.
Ben is across the street. He's coming back shortly.
He'll be here soon,
yes.
We hope.
Yes, definitely. What's been going on, man? What's been going on in your hiatus?
It's good to be back. Lots been going on. It's we had our Grand Prix this past weekend.
Yes, nice. I like how you did that.
Thank you.
That's good.
Another successful St. Pete Grand Prix, Firestone Grand Prix. It's one of the mayor's favorite events, well attended, and it's a great advertisement for the city every year.
I didn't realize how big that race. It's like a major race for the Indy circuit. I don't really follow the Indy cars or anything, but
yeah.
I know it's a big one.
Yeah, I've never really followed it until sort of we got this race here, and that the St. Pete race is the first race of the season. Kicks off the whole Indy season, and it's a it's aired in countries around the world. You get that few hours on national TV, so it's a win for the city. And the aerial views of the waterfront, Dalí Museum, the Vinoy. I mean, it's just, and then to think about how it could look a year or two from now with the new pier.
Yeah, yeah.
So which kind of puts our postcard back together for the city once that's in there again. So
yeah, the only thing that I dislike about that race, I love having it here, I think it's really a benefit to the city, but every weekend in the mornings I can hear it. It's usually nice at this time of year, so I like to leave the window open, and about 7 a.m 8 a.m
it starts.
Yep. And I get woken up, but this time I had to work during the weekend because I worked these races for Florida road races, and they put on like 5Ks and stuff. So the race happened on race weekend. So I was up at 5 o'clock in the morning anyways.
Well, it's crazy. The noise, you can hear it almost, I guess there's a point where you can't, but you could down far south in the city, west. I mean, it's kind of crazy how far that noise travels.
Yes. I get it all the way in the Old Northeast. So
yeah, yeah. Well, you're pretty close to the race.
That's true. I'm only about 5 blocks away from downtown.
But last year, I'm in Pinellas Point, and not too far from my house, you could hear it, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that went well again. We're just getting the work of the people done, including picking up sanitation.
Oh, that's a good segue there, Kev.
I just did that. And recycling, and that leads into our guest today.
Yes, yeah, so we have Jeff Donnell. Is that correct?
I usually ask
how to say last names. I'm very picky.
That's an easy
with
one.
That.
Jeff,
it. Donnell.
Yes. Jeff Donnell.
Yes.
Get his mic closer, Will.
Oh, I got too much stuff here. There we go.
There we go. Yeah, I got to really get close to these things.
I love the race, too. In fact, I moved to St. Pete from Long Beach, California.
Oh, you got
that. This is another waterfront Indy race location. So
street
I love
race.
It. Yeah, it's fantastic.
They kind of couple us together a lot.
That one is usually just maybe 2 weeks after this one will happen in Long Beach.
Yeah, that's so great.
Is it one and two? First one's in St. Pete, next one's in Long Beach?
I think so. I haven't looked at the schedule recently, but I know it used to be. Yeah, they're very close together. I know because the one in Long Beach, it was always a conflict because it was on Masters weekend. So I always had a,
That's. I didn't know you came from Long Beach. That's crazy.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
When did you come to St. Pete?
I have been in St. Pete for 2.5 years now, and I love it. This is just such a great city. I love living here.
What neighborhood are you in?
I'm also in Old Northeast.
Are you really?
Yep.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Wow.
So close enough to walk down and partake of everything going on downtown, the race and everything else. There's always something going on down there, and I love it.
If you live in Old Northeast and you're bored, something's wrong with you.
There is a lot to do. Yeah, you got the park. I can walk down to the park, ride bikes in North Shore. You got the beach. If you don't want to drive down to the real beach, you got the fake beach, as I call
it. That's real enough.
It's real enough. Yeah, there's sand, and you can buy the water.
Yeah, it'll be, again, with the new pier, that whole spa beach and area will be redone and look really good.
Yeah. So Jeff is the recycling support manager for the city. So how did you get this gig, and what are your, like, day-to-day duties?
Anything related to the recycling program that comes up will fall under my purview. So I try to help out with anything going on. And I got hired right before the program started a couple years ago, a little less than that now. It's been great. I love it. And I think the sanitation department, to their credit, this is not something that they were involved in before, and they're very focused, and they do a really great job picking up the trash. And now they do a great job in the recycling, but it wasn't at the high on their list. So they brought in the California tree hugger, and I'm the true believer in the group, so I push for it.
I want to stop on that because it reminded me, and I forget this, that the original plan, let me back way up. We talked about recycling in St. Pete, residential curbside recycling, for a decade or more. And there was always an excuse made by either a mayor at the time or city leaders that, you know, it's not worth doing. The trucks create a lot of pollution, you know, so on and so forth. It never got done. Eventually, you know, Mayor Christman comes in office. There was talk about trying to get this done once and for all. And the thought was we were going to outsource it. And there was, you know, we were working with, I think we even did a bid process to get bids. And then called an audible and basically said, let's do this in-house. And our team stepped up, like, so much. I mean, it was a really, really, really heavy lift to do this program. And everyone said, do it, outsource it.
Yeah, and, because I would imagine the learning curve or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah. So just, you know, for some context around this whole debate here is our guys rocked it, and they still are.
What do you, because I know I'm from Largo area originally, and I know they had recycling for years and years. Do they outsource theirs, or is theirs in-house too?
A lot of cities will use a Waste Pro or Waste Management. Jeff knows
right.
Some of these.
Yeah, a lot of places do. I do think that Largo actually does it in-house because we stole a couple of their drivers.
Okay.
They had some very experienced recycling drivers, and it's a little bit different than the regular sanitation driving. And we were able, you know, a couple of those guys that were working up there live in St. Pete, and this is a great gig for them. So they were looking to come down here. So it was very amicable with Largo. We didn't come in and just take their whole workforce.
That's what we do. We're the big city. Sometimes we do.
We're the
that.
Big dog in the area,
that's right?
Right.
What was the learning curve like? How did you learn how to start a recycling program?
There was a lot of work done before I even came on board with the director and some of the managers in sanitation who had gone to other cities, visited places that were doing it, a lot of online research, looking at white papers and other research papers, trying to make sure that we got a good program, and they did. You know, they got a... everything's been going really well since then.
When did the program start?
We started hiring people and getting equipment and everything in early to mid 2015 and started actually picking up recyclable material in June of 2015. So we're just short of 2 years right now.
And it's been very successful so far, from my understanding.
It has. It's been great on several different measurements. One is that prior to that, I know when I moved to town, if you wanted to recycle, I called the city and they said call Waste Pro. Mm-hmm. And there was a contract in place so that residents could contract individually with Waste Pro. So you had a contract with them, you paid them an annual fee, and they would come out and pick up in two bins. So you would do a little bit of separation, and they were just little handheld bins that you put out to the curb. and there were about 8,000 households in the city who had taken advantage of that opportunity to contract with
them.
Wow, right. So, and in contrast, now that we've rolled it out in a much wider program, we've got about 75, 76,000 households participating now. And we don't know exactly, but definitely the weight per household has gone up. So we're just head and shoulders above what was being recycled. Now we're doing about 1,000, maybe 1,100 tons a month of recycled material that we're picking up and taking for processing.
So, and does it go to just one center, or there are multiple centers?
There's one center, and it's here in town, which is great. That's another advantage that we have, is we don't have to load all that stuff up onto even larger trucks and truck it somewhere else. We've got a location here in town. We take it there. They've got this Rube Goldberg kind of warehouse in there that's really fascinating.
If you're driving on 275 heading north, you cannot miss it, really.
You can't miss
it. Is that
it?
Because I see it's got this big open hangar type thing.
And a big pile out there. We have been working with the company there. They've been partnering with us, and they're getting ready. I say that hopefully to erect a screen, so at least we won't see that as we're driving along 275. And can keep, you know, the wind from blowing some things around, hopefully. But inside that warehouse, they've got a whole series of machines and people that they use to separate out into 10, 12 different categories, the different recyclable material. So they get it all separated, baled together, and then all that material gets sold onto the open market to go back into somebody's manufacturing process.
I saw this show called Undercover Boss. I don't know if you all are familiar with this, but this particular episode was about, it was a waste management company. And I assumed that this stuff that gets collected, it goes into one big pile, and then they push it through this machine who magically sorts these things, and it goes to where it needs to go. That's not the case. At least it wasn't at this time. There are literally people that stand on these conveyor lines and pick through what shouldn't be in there.
There is, and the machines do some of it, but it's also a pretty labor-intensive process. We did a composition study with them, so this goes into partly how the city gets paid for the material that we take to them. So we sent about 40 tons of material through their process and had them separate it out so we could find out how much of it was contamination, how much trash was actually in our recyclables, but also how much, you know, by weight, how much was aluminum, how much is cardboard, how much is paper. And once they do that, then they can determine how much revenue the city is going to receive back for the material that we take there. Because we do get some money. It's not a lot, but we do get some money back from the material that we take to them. And, yeah, it's a labor-intensive, you know, some of it is by, they have magnets and little pulses of air and other things that are trying to separate it. But a lot of it is just men and women in there with gloves on pulling stuff out.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is amazing. So,
I haven't read this in a while, but I remember the recycling market was kind of down for a long time.
It was, and it has recovered to some degree. So right now it's a little bit higher than it was when we started, and certainly higher than it was in the middle. We had a period where, maybe 6 months after we started, the commodities market just kind of went in the tank.
Right.
So it was really low, and we weren't really getting much back. But it has recovered. It's still low historically, but it's higher than it has been since our program has been running.
And, of course, it's not just about money, right? I mean, we're not – every piece of garbage that's going to recycling is not going to our county landfill and burning.
That's right. So anything that does get taken up to the county facility, we pay $37.50 per ton to deposit something up at the county facility. So anything that's going into the recycling, there's a little bit, not much, but there's a little bit of money coming back as opposed to $37 going out.
Right. It's just a good thing for the environment overall.
Yeah.
So you don't actually process the stuff in-house. That goes, once it gets sorted, it gets shipped off to somebody who does that.
Right. So we're partnering with a company called Waste Connections. And they do the separating. So the way it works is we have our people and our trucks out on the road. We collect it. We take it to Waste Connections. We pay them $20 per ton to process it. And then the proceeds of when they sell it come back and we do a split. So they get some of it and we get some of it. If ever the amount from the proceeds from the sale, if it didn't cover the $20, then it would just be a wash. We wouldn't end up owing them additional money. It would just be, we wouldn't get any money back that month. Mm-hmm. But luckily, it's never been that bad. We've always gotten a little bit. Right now, we're averaging, I'd say, about $12,000 a month that come back to the city after the processing. So it's not a huge amount of money, but that's a positive flow to the city of $12,000 as opposed to the $30,000 or $40,000 we would have to pay to the county if we took that same amount of weight up to the county facility. So once you add all those things together, it's about a $50,000, $55,000 difference per month.
Where does that $12,000 go? Does it get reinvested into the management program?
It's back in. Yeah, it's just part of the same fund. So the recycling program and the sanitation department as a whole works as an enterprise fund. So the money that pays to pay the people and buy the trucks and all of that stuff comes from the fee that residents pay on their utility bill. It doesn't come from property taxes or other kinds of revenue income. It's a kind of a zero-sum game. We try to make sure that the fees are high enough to cover our costs, but not too much higher than that, so it will wash out at the end.
How much does a program cost the city a year?
Ooh. I remember the early number. At first we had the sort of capital outlay of all the trucks. I'd hesitate to throw out a number.
Yeah, I don't have an exact figure. I know that we did the trucks. Right. Initially we bought trucks, and we had to buy 80,000 of those blue carts, which aren't cheap either. So all of that went on a loan. So we're paying that back over an 8-year period. So those, that 1/8 essentially of all those costs are in our annual budget. Plus the people, the drivers, and so on that are out making sure that the program works.
It's the recycling program is intertwined with sanitation in general. Then I'm assuming there's not just a budget for recycling, or does that go into?
There is. It's a piece of the sanitation department. So in addition to the sanitation, the trash pickup, the sanitation department also handles the recycling. They also handle rodent control, graffiti removal.
Special
pickups. So if people have furniture that they need to get rid of, and I'll put in a plug right now. Many people believe that they're going to get charged if they have a mattress or a sofa or something. So they end up.
I always thought that.
So they end up putting it out in the alley and not telling anybody and hoping it'll go away.
I've done that too. I'm
just call. We'll
say.
Come get it.
That's
yeah,
right.
It's good to know.
We'll come get it, and there's no charge. You just have to let us know, and we come out and pick it up. So I'll just put in a plug
for that. Thank you, Jeff. And people can go on our C-Click Fix app, and we will. We'll follow up. And the other thing, the relation between recycling and solid waste pickup, is that right? Calling it solid waste.
That's
pickup?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Eventually, you know what we're seeing is there's now less solid waste. So the big black containers, like my house, has less stuff in it. And generally, we're now, my wife and I probably wheel our black container out once a week instead of the twice a week. We just don't have enough to put it out twice a week. And I think that's happening more and more throughout the city. And eventually it'd be nice to have once a week pickup for the black containers. That's the goal.
Right? Yeah, I think it would be great if we could get to a point where, because right now recycling, of course, is only picked up once every 2 weeks.
Right.
Trash is picked up twice a week. So as those change a little bit, we'd love to see it balanced out where we hit everybody once a week for recycling, once a week for trash.
Yeah.
Yeah, not only good for the environment, but good on the budget, too.
Yeah, for sure.
So if people wanted to, you said if they have furniture or something like that that they wanted to pick up and they don't want to be like me and just throw it in an alley.
Are you saying
I've done
you're
it maybe
a, bad
a few times? Okay, yes, but now I won't do it anymore because I know. Yeah. So if I wanted to get in contact, what numbers would I call? Or you know,
I do not have the number right here. We could probably get it before the end of this.
Yeah, no, Mayor's Action Center 893-7111.
Or use the C-Click Fix.
Or use the app.
Or use the app.
It works. I mean, we'll take care of it. So.
There's also on stpete.org. If you go to the sanitation page, there's the customer service number is on there. They can handle it. And we'll definitely come out and pick it up. One other thing I wanted to mention that can be handled at that phone number, call the sanitation department. We've got some people in the city who are, you know, just gangbuster recyclers. And there is a nominal fee, the $2.95, that goes on to everybody's utility bill who is part of the program. And if you happen to be one of those people who recycles like crazy and you need a second bin, that's another thing that there's no cost for. So if you call us and let us know, hey, we're recycling like crazy, we need a second one, we'll just be happy to bring one out there and collect as much as you can give us.
I did not know that.
What kind of things can be recycled?
Can be recycled is...
besides the obvious ones that we all know, the glass, you know, is there anything surprising that maybe people didn't know they could recycle?
No, I don't think so. It's, you know, it's all the basic things. So it's plastic numbered 1 through 7. So anything that's got that that triangle on it,
yep.
With one important exception. I'll come back to that one. So, but most plastic things can be recycled. Glass of all different colors, aluminum, other kinds of metal like steel cans and so on, that can be recycled. Paper, cardboard. So all the things that you would ordinarily think of, those are all good. The main exception that we try and emphasize is plastic bags. So specifically like grocery bags that you get, those are recyclable, but we can't take it in our program because of, we talked about earlier, all that machinery that's being used to separate the paper from the plastic, from the cardboard. Those plastic bags get wound up in the equipment, and then they have to shut the whole thing down and crawl up inside there and undo it. So we try to keep all that out. And the worst thing that would happen is if somebody used a plastic bag to collect all of their recyclable material and put it in there, because, like you were saying, there's people standing next to a conveyor belt, and as that bag full of aluminum cans will be coming down, somebody's just going to reach in and grab that bag and it ends up in the trash. So
really?
Including all their aluminum cans.
Yeah.
So we just got to make sure that people keep that out.
So let's talk about plastic bags for a second. Soapbox time. Say no to plastic bags, right? I mean, there's so many ways now to get your groceries and not use plastic bags. They sell the canvas ones and the other types of materials, and they end up everywhere.
I use it. Well, I'll tell you what, though. I use shopping bags for my garbage bags. So if I use them for my kitchen, then my bathroom bags.
That's
too.
Good. You can reuse your shopping bags to pick up some dog poop or something, right? People
right.
do that.
Yeah.
But generally, I mean, just, you know, try not. I go to CVS or Walgreens, and there's a person who buys, you know, one item, and they put it in a bag.
Yeah.
You don't need to put it in a bag.
Right, right. That's a lot of times just the cashier. I usually stop.
Tell the cashier. I don't need that bag.
That's right. Yeah, but most people are just.
I always say, you know, save the bag, save the trees. It confuses them for a second.
Right.
Like, what is he talking about? This guy's stupid. Also, on what can you recycle, we have this app called the St. Pete Collects.
St. Pete Collects, yes.
And on that app, if you go on your app stores on the Apple or the Google Android, look for St. Pete Collects. There's a really cool feature called the Waste Wizard, I believe.
That's right.
Doing all this from memory. I don't even have the app on my phone right now. Waste Wizard, you can type in anything you want. You can type in Will Koontz into the Waste Wizard.
No, they just really throw that right in the trash.
It'll tell you. You know, I think I had one for a while. Maybe it was hangers. Coat hangers,
right.
Clothes hangers. They've got everything in there. The crazy stuff. Type it in, and they'll tell you whether you can put it in the blue can.
Yep.
Yeah, that's good to know, because I know my buddy, he collects his recycling in a garbage bag, and I think just throws the bag right in there.
Well, you see, your buddy is what's wrong with America.
So yeah. Now you can teach him. He can still collect it that way, but then he needs to dump it into the container without the bag.
Right.
Oh, I can't wait to tell him, too, because he's one of these guys who's always
What's his
right.
name? Can we just call him out?
This is Kevin O'Brien.
Yeah, and, and basically
that's wrong.
He's...
That's wrong.
Kevin O'Brien is what's wrong with America.
Yes, I agree. I'm going to take that as a soundbite
right.
and show him this for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
going
to love it.
He's doing it all wrong.
Yes. Agreed.
Which is no surprise if you know Kevin O'Brien. Right?
Hear that, Kev? I told you, man. I told you. So there is some interesting things going on technology-wise with the recycling program. There's, I know you mentioned the RFID reading system.
Yes, yeah. So this is one way that we can collect some data about participation rate, among the city as a whole, and even break it down a little bit further than that. So two of the measures that we look at are set out rate and participation rate. And the difference is set out rate, meaning if there happens to be 10,000 containers in a zone today and we picked up 5,000 of them, then our set out rate was 50%. So it's on any given day how many of the containers have been set out for collection. And when we look at participation rate, we look a slightly longer period of time, because we know that, you know, those bins are pretty big, and if you're just two people or something, maybe you don't put it out every time it's your collection day. So what we do is we say if somebody has put out their container at least once during a month, then we know that they're a participant in the program. So we look at both of those measures, and we're running on set out rate, we're running about 52% or so, 53%. So a little over half of the containers on any given day are going to be put out for collection. And our participation rate is running about 65%, which is really great for a relatively new program. You know, we've been in operation now about a year and a half, and we've got 65% of the people who can be participating are participating. So very happy with that.
And the way
that we capture that data is through those RFID chips. So the blue bins inside the handle, there's an RFID chip, and on the truck is a reader. So every time that truck lifts the container, we get a notification that that particular container was collected. And that way we can look at over time, over that period of a month, how many of the containers were collected, so we can measure that participation rate.
What has been the most successful neighborhoods where recycling has really taken off?
Well, a couple of the smaller ones, I actually have a list of our top 20 neighborhoods. This was from January. We're still calculating the February numbers. So Eden Isle, Barclay Estates, Venetian Isles, but some of these are relatively small neighborhoods where there might only be 60 or 70 households. I think I saw that the first big neighborhood, let's see, Shore Acres, has a little over 2,300 homes in there, and about 85% of them are participating.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
And some of those other ones, on this particular month, Eden Isle, it's a relatively small neighborhood, 71 households, but 90% of them are participating. So this is great. And one of the reasons that we want to know this is there's two things that we might want to do to improve the program. One is to decrease the amount of contamination that ends up in the recycling, and we can circle back on that. One of the other things that we want to do is increase the participation. So you know, we have relatively small amount of money that we can use to try and market the program. We try to get out in person at different events, the Saturday morning market or other neighborhood events. We'll put a table up and give away the tote bags so people can use those in the grocery store instead of the plastic bags, and just talk to people about recycling. But we also want to do some targeted marketing. We might mail something, a postcard, to areas that aren't participating as much. We don't want to use that marketing money marketing to Eden Isle when they're already participating at 90%. So we'll take that money and market to a neighborhood that maybe is only participating at 35% and try and increase that participation.
Yeah, right on.
So I'm looking here at our neighborhoods.
Where's Old Northeast?
You guys are both in Old Northeast.
We are.
How y'all doing?
I think we're kind of middle of the road.
Really? I'm surprised.
Yeah.
There's kind of a bunch of hippies all around that town. It's either old rich people
old Northeast,
or
Northeast.
So
you got
hippies.
A little bit of everything in Old Northeast.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know why it's not popping out of me. My neighborhood is 42.
Ooh, you got to start pounding the pavement, bro.
42 out of 84.
Knock on some doors for the environment.
We're right in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, we've got breaking it down in 84 different neighborhoods around the city. And I don't know what the percentage is, but that's got to be probably about 90% of the households. Everybody is in one particular neighborhood or another.
Yeah, this is very interesting. Looking for the mayor's neighborhood. I think the mayor's neighborhood needs to represent, I would think.
You would think so,
Yeah. Oh, there you guys are. You're actually number 19.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Not too bad.
Historic Old Northeast is number 19, 78.6% in January.
Yeah, see, we broke into the top 20. I don't think we were there before.
Very good.
Yeah, I always try to help out when I can with the recycling thing, for sure. Well, listen, the last thing I wanted to get to before we got to go is I know that the the trucks were recently fitted with these cameras that monitor the driving and not only the drivers, but what's going on in the traffic outside the cars.
That's right. Yeah, and that's not just for recycling. That's for the whole sanitation department. So obviously there's a lot more trucks out picking up solid waste than there are recycling trucks. And this is across the whole fleet. It's really an effort to try and increase the safety of the drivers and the public. We've got a really fantastic group of professional drivers. They're really so good. But this is just one more step to try and make that even safer. The last thing you want to have is a truck that big and that heavy doing something we don't want it to do. So this is just an effort to improve that. And the way it works is there's a camera on the windshield that looks in both directions. So it looks back into the cab of the truck, but it also looks out in front of the vehicle. So if something happens, like let's say the driver has to hit the brake hard, then that will trigger what they call an event. And what it does is it saves 12 seconds of video. So it saves 8 seconds before he hit the brake and 4 seconds after. So we get a little context of what was going on prior to that happening. So he hits the brake, and then we can find out, well, it was because that little car darted right in front of him, and then it hit the brake, so he had to brake to avoid that car. Or he was changing the channel on the radio. Mm-hmm. And then if that's the case, then we can bring him in. We'll try and coach him and try and prevent those kind of things in the future. So it's really trying to modify any behavior that we might see that would make the drivers and the public even safer in the future is really what that's about.
When did that start, that program?
You know, we were testing it for probably about 6 months or so, but we just got approval from the city council the last, I think, maybe 2 weeks ago for the contract. I'm not even sure the contract's been signed yet. They were kind of our legal and their legal. We're going back and forth a little bit on the contract, but it's essentially going into effect right now. Mm. And all the equipment is already in the truck, so as soon as we get it signed, then we're ready to go.
How did the drivers feel about it?
You know, there was a little bit of apprehension, obviously, if people have a camera pointed at them all day long.
Yeah.
But they quickly learned that, you know, nobody can use that camera to monitor them. Nobody can just, like, check in and see what's Joe doing right now. It doesn't work that way. Everything is handled through this outside company. And one of the things we liked about that is that when an event happens, we don't have to have people sitting in an office watching hours of video to try and determine what was going on. The event is triggered. It saves that 12 seconds of video. And then DriveCam, the company, will review it. And then they'll kind of grade it on – they've got a scale so they can say this was something that the driver needs to be coached about, or they can look at it and say the driver was fine. In fact, he prevented an accident because he was paying attention and that other car darted in front of him. So it can be used on both ways. But we don't have to have people looking at that. The manager comes in the morning – and he might have a couple of events that happened with his drivers yesterday, but DriveCam has already reviewed them and let him know which ones are really relevant, which drivers he might need to talk to and coach.
Right on.
These drivers are pros. It's crazy to me that what they have to deal with. They got these big trucks, small alleys, small roads sometimes, and the maneuvering that they do to get these cans.
Mm-hmm.
It's really amazing. And when we think about it on the solid waste side, we were saying earlier, we pick up everybody in the city twice per week. So that means in any two-day period, they're hitting every house in the city.
Yeah.
You know, on Monday and Tuesday, between those 2 days, they'll hit everybody, and then they'll hit them all again on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, it's quite a job.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you got anything else before we wrap this up?
Not at all. I'm just thankful for Jeff's time and
That was, frankly, much more interesting than I thought it was going to be, frankly. That was a good hang.
I was trying to think of recycling jokes or
something. I'm glad you didn't,
and
frankly.
Well, the only thing I could do was recycle old jokes, and I didn't want to do that today.
That wasn't too bad.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Kevin.
All right.
No
Ben, obviously.
No Ben, yeah. It's all right. Well, we missed him. We'll get him next time. Before we go, though, shameless plugs for me. We got a benefit at the Hollander. I forget we're calling it Poolside Jokes by the Hollander. I didn't come up with the name.
That sounds fun, yeah.
Yeah, but it's benefiting Pet Pal. That's going to be on April Fool's Day. It's a free event. You know, the Hollander Pool is gorgeous, so come out and hang. I think the event starts at 1.
What is this? What date is this?
April Fool's Day. I think it's a Saturday,
all right.
April 1st.
So we'll tell Will we're going and what we won't. And
clearly.
That'll be April Fool's.
That's fine. I was more talking to these people if they're listening.
Okay,
so,
I got it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But it should be a good event, and it's benefiting Pet Pal. So that's good. And then I also got homemade broadcast stickers made, really cool, and they're for free. So if you email me your address, I'll ship some out to you. And that's thehomemadebroadcast@radiosaintpete.com. And check out the homemade broadcast Sundays, 6:15 on Radio St. Pete.
Thanks for listening to Radio St. Pete's City Hall Broadcast, an informal look inside your city government. This is Mayor Rick Kreisman inviting you to join us next time for the City Hall Broadcast.